You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 0-1 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Dean Martin bringing us in. It is snowing outside as I record this, as we record this here for KFGO.com, this podcast show. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson. You can find me on Twitter at PintoKFGO. Of course, my co-host, the always white, White Shadow. You can find Brad Jones on Twitter at...
at the Bison Guy, and I love your choice of Dean Martin bringing us in there. The Rat Pack Christmas CD is on a constant loop this time of year.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's going to be a constant theme for these podcasts as we go through the month of December. We're going to open up with some Christmas music, probably end with some Christmas music as well. You got to get into the spirit. You really do, because it is starting to snow. The December, the Black Friday, all the shopping, everything like that going on, and it just you gotta get ready, because right now as we sit here and record this, it is December 1st, this Sunday, and so it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm excited. The other thing about December that we're gonna notice with Brad Jones, he's gonna be on the road quite a bit. You can hear him now. He's in his hotel. Brad, where you're somewhere in Minnesota, correct?
I am. I will be roaming throughout the northern. North Minnesota today, this week, actually. I'm in Thief River Falls right now, and I'll be heading up to Roseau, International Falls, Baudette, Warren, kind of roaming the countryside here.
Now, did you take some leftovers with you from Thanksgiving? And a happy Thanksgiving for you, to you as well, belated anyways, but did you take some leftovers with you on the trip? Because that's a long trip.
It is a long trip. I didn't take any leftovers. And while we're doing happies, by the way, I got to wish, today is my mom's birthday. So I got to wish a happy birthday to Mama White Shadow.
Well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to wish a happy birthday to my father, whose birthday was yesterday.
Yesterday. Okay.
So then we got that out of the way.
Now we're officially good children.
Mm-hmm.
No, I did not. Actually, after going to Grandma's, where I called in from the last time that I phoned in a podcast.
Grandma White Shadow?
Yep, Grandma White Shadow. We went down there for Thanksgiving, ate a ton, brought leftovers back, ate all of those, and I stopped by a McDonald's drive-thru on the way to Thief River here.
Oh, my goodness.
And I put down 4 cheeseburgers, a large fry, 4 apple pies, and a large Mellow Yellow.
Oh.
I'm the pinnacle of health right here.
Boom, shakalaka!
That is just gross. I would feel like a bloated calf ready to explode, bloated cow ready to explode if I ate that much garbage. How do you do that? How do you do that? Like, we're just 3 days removed from Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I'm still getting over the food coma / hangover of eating all the delicious turkey and mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes and you're downing processed meat. What is wrong with you?
Yes. Well, what's wrong with me is a conversation that we'll take up a lot of time. But I feel pretty good. I'm actually thinking about maybe finding the fitness room here while we're on the podcast, maybe doing some of the podcast on the treadmill.
Oh, boy. Please don't.
Feeling ready to go.
Please don't.
Just ignore any vomiting sounds in the background.
Yeah, we're going to have to get this going. We're going to have to get this going before you decide to get up off the bed and actually try to go and find the workout room, because hopefully they got it locked up. It's late. They know you're around. They're going to lock it up. So you can find our podcast, of course, on KFGO.com. We're also on iTunes. We love your comments and or questions for us. Marcus from Mayville does have another comment for this week. It does have to do, I believe, with the NBA, and we'll get to that towards the end of the show. Marcus from Mayville, a constant contributor. Of course, we have Tyler in Tennessee and all the other wonderful contributors out there throughout the podcast land. Thank you again for contributing to this. You can email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com, and we'll get to that. And of course, on iTunes, on KFGO.com, there's a comment section there. Find us on Facebook. We'll tweet out the link. We'll Facebook out the link. It's all good. All right. Little house cleaning is done with. Let us get to
local.
So, the North Dakota State University football team found out who their opponent was going to be or is going to be this weekend at the Fargo Dome. North Dakota State will take on the Furman Paladins. Yes. That's right. I have no idea what a paladin is. This might
isn't there something like with paladins in Harry Potter or something?
Oh man, why you got to be such a? Why do you got to throw out the geek? You just geek so hard sometimes.
No, I'm asking you. I assumed that you would know.
I am not that big of a nerd. I am not. I'm sorry, but Harry Potter is just. I stopped reading it once I turned 13. And the only reason I would care now is because Emma Watson played Hermione or Hermione or whatever her name is. But yeah,
I have no idea what that is.
I don't know either. It's. I'm looking it up on. Wikipedia.
Okay.
And I'm trying to quickly read through what this is. They're warriors in Charlemagne's court.
Okay.
Back in Europe, I think the best thing you can glean from this is that they're warriors. It might be even be Middle Eastern stuff going on here. Take some time and go look it up. I'm not going to try to read it to you because it doesn't work for radio, but they're warriors is essentially what they are.
Okay.
They came away with the victory against South Carolina State on the road, 30-20. This is a team out of the Southern Conference, and we're familiar with the Southern Conference. NDSU fans are because of teams like Wofford and Georgia Southern. Furman came in overall with a 7-5 record, kind of snuck in to the playoffs. However, they had some good games towards the end. Brad, I'm going to read these things off to you. This is how they ended their season. They beat Georgia Southern on the road, which obviously not an easy thing to do. Georgia Southern beat Florida a couple weeks back. They beat them, took down another Southern team that went to the playoffs, Samford, at home, beat Western Carolina by 12 on the road, took down Wofford by 13 at home, and then went on the road again to South Carolina State and won that game by 10. We don't know a lot about this team, but looking at which one you could have had, does this one, Brad, how do I put it, make you a little bit more worried based off of the conference they come out of?
Honestly, not really. I think Bison fans and not the Bison team have largely overlooked. And, you know, which is interesting because we've been talking a lot about, okay, Bison fans, everybody's just kind of been in wake me up when the playoffs start mode.
Right.
And I don't know if people actually consider the playoffs starting with this game.
That's a good point. It's a really good point.
You know, which is not, it's not the MO of the actual, of the team, but I think that I could see a little bit of that with the fans. And I guess maybe for better or worse, I'm not really any different in this particular, case. I'm just not overly concerned about Furman.
Looking at some of the things they've done throughout the season, they don't score a lot of points. They only average about 24 a game. They give up 23. They're very similar in that regard. Defensively, there's a lot of things that if you're an opponent, you can get against them. They give up a lot of yards on the ground, 2,500. They're giving up 2,600 through the air.
Yeah.
But they keep it close. I mean, they're one of these teams that you go, boy, we should be beating them by more, but they're still hanging around. And that was the thing, too, with South Carolina State. I watched some of this game, and I watched it going, you know, they're not doing anything particularly well, but they take advantage of some small mistakes. They were a big play team against South Carolina State in that game, in the playoff game Saturday, in fact. They had a touchdown on a 90-yard punt return that this guy, Jarius Hallman, who's someone that you're going to have to watch out for. He's a big play receiver, big-time player for this team. Defender, I should say. Not a receiver, he's a defender. He had a 34-yard interception return as well. But he had a 90-yard punt return where South Carolina State had punted it away. It looked like they had him trapped on the far sideline. He takes it on a hop and then just takes off and untouched all the way to the end zone. Again, this is one of these teams that's what you saw against South Carolina State is they capitalize on big plays. They also had a 50-yard touchdown pass in the second quarter. It was a one-play, 50-yard bomb, 50-yard drive. They're going to take advantage of those things. South Carolina State in that game had more first downs. They had more yards of total offense, but it's the opportunity that they just hang around. That, to me, is a little bit scary.
Yeah. Of all the things that you said there, I think the most telling thing was that this team really doesn't do any one thing well. And if you're going to play the Bison, you better be able to do at least one thing extraordinarily well. whether it's run the ball like we've seen Georgia Southern do, whether it's you can sit back and you can throw the ball and read the defense well, you better be able to do something exceptionally well.
Well, if
you can't do that, you're gonna mention the big plays. I mean, I don't know that you can depend on big plays against the Bison. They may give up one or two, but you're not going to beat the Bison just on big plays alone. You got to be able to do something consistently well.
Here's what I will say. Looking at what they do turnover-wise, and that is always the great equalizer in my mind,
sure,
they're largely in favor of them. You look at their stats so far, they've caused 31 fumbles, and they've recovered 16 of them. They've had 13 interceptions, so you're already looking at 29 turnovers caused. And they've only turned the ball over 9 interceptions, and I'm quickly looking down here, 7-16. So they've only turned it over 16. You're looking at a plus 13 turnover margin. That's pretty impressive. And the fumbles, here's what I'll say about that. Georgia Southern, Wofford, from what we know about the Southern Conference, they like to run the triple option.
Yep.
One of the things that happens in the triple option, a lot more fumbles than in a regular offense. It's just
sure. The
nature of the beast. But even so, 31 caused fumbles this year. 16 recoveries. They capitalize on other teams' mistakes. That, to me, is how you're going to get NDSU or any other team in the playoffs if you're Furman. That's where I see them coming up with maybe a surprise here or there. Overall, though, Brad, again, you said it best. They don't really do one thing well that you go, okay, this is where they're going to be, you know, right there. The turnovers, yeah, but NDSU just doesn't turn the ball over. And Brad, Brock Jensen this year has been probably the most efficient I've ever seen him at a quarterback. Would you disagree with that?
Most efficient that you've seen him, or?
Throughout his whole career, I've never seen him more efficient.
Probably. He was really, really good his sophomore year.
He was.
When he had Warren Holloway. But, yeah, that's probably a fair statement.
And so, to me, because of that, I don't see NDSU having a problem with Furman. Do you?
No. I really don't. I think people are already kind of looking ahead and have their are kind of licking their chops for Montana. And I don't think Furman's getting is getting a strong look. Maybe they probably should, and I'm sure the actual team is taking them seriously, but they're going to have to do something early to get my attention.
They're going to have to do something. The way that you can come out and really scare people is do something big right away.
Yep.
And Furman, last week, like we saw, big play team. They had the big play ability. But again, you're walking into the Fargo Dome. This is going to be probably at one of its peaks when it comes to energy that it has been all season, especially since the UNI game. You're going to have a lot of fans. The students are back. They're going to be ready. They're going to be pumped. They're going to be jacked. To me, you're going to walk in and go, whoa. You know, because the one thing I noticed when I was watching, I probably watched 5 or 6 of the FCS playoff games Saturday. Didn't really have a lot going on, obviously. But the stadiums that they have there are very, how do I put it? Bare. I think it's a bare bones is the best way to put it. Not a lot going on. And so I've always been kind of interested as to why NDSU's Fargo Dome is such a home field advantage. And then you watch, and we got an opportunity for those Bison fans out there, got an opportunity this year to see where NDSU was playing. You look at Youngstown State, not a lot of fans there. Southern Illinois didn't bring out a lot of fans. You know, South Dakota State, yeah, there was a lot of people there, but it's an outdoor stadium, and NDSU really took the crowd out of it because South Dakota State ran for negative 32 yards.
Yep.
The Fargo Dome is so unique, is A, because it's so big for FCS football, and B, it's enclosed, and there's seats everywhere. You're not going to find seats in the end zone in some of these places, which why is that a big deal? But it is, because all of a sudden, instead of having it come from the student section, you got it coming from the band, and you got it coming from 19,000 people, the noise. It's going to hit them. I think it's going to hit them like a ton of bricks. And frankly, I don't know if it. You can prepare as much as you want. You can talk to Wofford. You can talk to Georgia Southern coaches and go, hey, what to expect here? But you don't really know what that's going to be like till you get there. That plus the fact
take a breath here, Danny. My gosh, can I hit the he's on fire button? Because I don't think you've taken a breath or stopped talking in about 5 minutes here.
I'm just trying to get it out there that I don't think Furman stands a chance.
Okay.
And I probably could have said that 5 minutes ago, but I didn't. I wanted to ramble a little bit. I'm ready to go today.
You did that.
I'm ready to go tonight. There's no doubt about it. I'm ready to.
Okay. So. Again, I'll do the same thing that I did with you against USD.
Okay.
Where would we have to set the line at for you to consider taking Furman? If I said Furman plus 21, are you taking NDSU or Furman?
Furman plus 21. Am I taking?
So would you take Furman plus 21? So NDSU would have to win by 20 or less.
Hmm.
What side of that line would you take?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
I would say I would take NDSU plus
21. So you would take NDSU minus 21?
Yeah.
Okay. If I move that up to 28.
You're just trying to goat me here, I can tell.
I'm just curious. I want to see where exactly that confidence level is, because when we did this for the USD game, you know, it was around 24 and you started to waver.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm not necessarily looking for a wager here. I'm just curious where you're at.
You know, I'd say four touchdowns.
Okay. So if I gave you Furman plus 28, you'd take Furman?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Because I don't see what Furman's going to be able to do against NDSU. And even last year, South Dakota State, a marginally better team than Furman, scored what, 3 points? It was 28-3. It was something like that. And they, marginally better team A and B, they knew the opponent. They knew what the Fargo Dome was like coming in. That was the whole thing. They have an advantage. They know what it's like. We can go on and on about the Fargo Dome forever. And I understand I'm probably talking about it ad nauseum. But the reality is that it's going to be a different animal. It really is when these playoff games get to going.
Yeah.
And
no, I agree.
And so I just don't think Furman stands a chance. You and I both, NDSU, we feel is going to win this game pretty handily, move on to the next round. We'll keep it local. We'll kind of get around the FCS playoffs here. Before we get to any of the other games, of course, there was 8 this week. Let's go through our bracket challenge here, Brad.
Do we have to?
Well, let's hold off for it a little bit. We'll hold off because
like just not mention it at all?
No, we have to talk about it.
We do? Oh. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, we have to talk about it. Want to touch on South Dakota State, Northern Arizona. SDSU goes out and they win big against Northern Arizona. Were you surprised at all by SDSU winning by as much as they did?
I don't know. They kind of are what they are. If you can't stop the run, then you're just toast. It's just the way it is. And Northern Arizona couldn't stop the run. Sumner went, 4-15 with an interception? I mean, you know, that's – I'm not – if you can't stop the run, South Dakota State's going to win big pretty much every time. They're just going to beat you up.
Zach Zenner – again, just another
30 carries, 200 some yards.
Yeah, just another huge, huge game. To me, it seems so funny how the Big Sky has done in the last few playoff games. I mean, they get all these teams in. Here are some of the Big Sky teams that got in. Let's see here. Eastern Washington, Montana got in. Northern Arizona got in. Southern Utah got in. You have 4 teams from the Big Sky. They went 0-2 in that first week of the playoffs, and it wasn't even close in either of them. Sam Houston State played Southern Utah, won 51-20. Now, Southern Utah was on the road, granted. Northern Arizona had a home game, and they were unable to stop Zenner or the South Dakota State offense, especially in the second half. Zenner, 249 yards, like you said, a couple touchdowns. Does that kind of awaken you if you're Eastern Washington, go, oh, okay, you know, we actually have to play some defense against this team?
I mean, I think Eastern Washington is going to – I mean, again, with South Dakota State, it's not a secret they're not a team that, you know, you really are having to worry about scheming against. They do what they do, and if your defensive front isn't up to the challenge, you're going to get run all over. It's not like there's a huge chess match that goes on with South Dakota State. How many trick plays have you seen from South Dakota State that you can remember over the years?
Right. Not many.
Not many. They run the football. If you stop the run, you win. If you can't stop the run, you lose.
To me, it would be an eye-opener regardless of what team South Dakota State goes on and faces, but I like the matchup with Eastern Washington because they're very soft defensively.
It's not a bad matchup for SDSU. It really isn't.
And South Dakota State likes to control the ball. Their defense has gotten better. They held Northern Arizona 1 for 13 on third down conversions on Saturday. You get the ball back.
SDSU wasn't much better on third down.
No, they weren't. And they're not throwing the ball. The offense, obviously, like you said, is pretty much one-dimensional. Sumner has to play better out in Eastern Washington next weekend. But
does he, though? I mean,
I think he does.
If he can run the ball, he doesn't have to.
Well, but you can't. Here's my problem is that the Eastern Washington offense is much better than what Northern Arizona has. So
sure.
When you go 4 for 14 on third down, but you know that offense that you're punting it to is very one-dimensional themselves and they can't move it a lot, their quarterback isn't that dynamic, you're not that worried. You'll maybe run a draw on a 3rd and 15 or a 3rd and 7 even and give it to Zenner and try to get a first down that way instead of throwing it. You're going to have to get better play from Sumner. You just are, because Vernon Adams, the quarterback for Eastern Washington, is one of the front runners, probably one of the top three, maybe top five for the Walter Payton.
Sure, and that's all well and good. But what I'm saying is if it comes down to you need better play out of Sumner, you've already lost. If that's what you have to depend on is, okay, in order to win this game, we're going to need Sumner to make some plays for us, you've already lost the game. It has to be – in order for SDSU to win, they have to get 30 carries and 200-some yards out of Zenner.
Well, I'm not saying they don't have to either, but I'm saying Sumner has to play better. He has to. If they have a shot at this game, what you're saying, I don't know if I'm necessarily disagreeing with. I'm not going to say that – in order for this team to, if you have to say Sumner has to play better, you've already lost. I'm saying if you want to win the game, he has to play better. I don't know.
And I disagree with that because I don't think he has to, in order for SDSU to win the game, he has to do basically nothing. It's all on Zenner. What I'm saying is that the game should not come down to Sumner, and he can go 4 of 15 again, and they can win the game.
If
he goes 30 carries and 250 yards.
There's some wager somewhere in this, and I want to make it because I think you're dead wrong.
There's not really a wager here. I don't think. I think it's just more. It's more
opinion based
type thing. Yeah. I don't see. I just, like I said, if it comes down to Sumner passing the ball, they're going to lose. I don't think it's, well, Sumner can play better and he's going to have to.
He's got to do better.
Sumner, in order for them to win, Sumner needs to do nothing and Zenner needs to do everything.
Okay, and I think that if that's your idea going in, you've already lost. I'm completely opposite. I think you need to, you still are going to get your 30, 35 carries, whatever it is, to Zenner. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, but what I am saying is you have to have better play out of your quarterback. You can't go 4 for 15 and expect to win at Eastern Washington. You can't. You need to control the ball, which I think they'll do because you want to keep it out of the hands of Eastern Washington. Because that's the whole crux of the issue here. The way to beat a team like that is go, okay, we're only going to give you so much time with the ball.
Okay, and that has nothing to do with Sumner.
But that has everything to do with Sumner because he's going to be asked to complete some third down plays, some 3rd and 6s. And if you want drives to continue, you need that. You need him to hit those.
It's going to come down to Zenner, and it's going to come down to the defense, and Sumner is going to play little to no part in this game.
All right. Well, I disagree, but we'll move on from it because I don't think we're going to get anywhere just banging our heads against the wall.
I agree.
FCS pick'ems. Let's discuss here.
Yeah.
You didn't do so hot.
No. No, not so much. No.
So if you went on KFGO.com this week, we had an email conversation, and we picked the first round of the SCS playoff games. And I picked first, and then Brad had every other one after that. Brad's games were as follows: Coastal Carolina versus Bethune-Cookman, Sam Houston State versus Southern Utah,
yeah,
Jacksonville State versus Samford, and then Butler versus Tennessee State.
Yes.
In those four games, Brad went 1-for-3. Daniel had the other games.
Did you just go third person, really?
Yes, I did. Pinto had the other games. Should I just do the whole show, the rest of the show in third person?
The only thing worse than going third person is going third person with your nickname.
Bo Jackson. Bo don't know. Anyways, I had South Carolina State Furman, New Hampshire Lafayette, Northern Arizona SDSU, and then Fordham Sacred Heart.
Yes.
And I went 3-1.
Yes.
So, how does it work? Do winners go first? Is that how that works?
I think so. I think you just keep going with the, we just keep going. You take the first game, I'll take the second game. We just keep going with that.
Okay, so make sure and check that out once we get on the email conversations. We'll probably have that up about Thursday of next week. We'll see how it goes for that.
Right.
Yeah,
Thursday's a good day.
So I get the NDSU Furman game. We already discussed that. We already discussed South Dakota State Eastern Washington. Montana, Coastal Carolina. I think
That'd be my game.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah. I think Montana's going to be okay. I honestly, at home in Coastal Carolina, it's a long way to travel. They did really well against Bethune-Cookman. I mean, that game was a throttling. Looking at the final score, that one, 48-24.
Yeah, I was loud wrong on that one.
Quarterback tossed 4 touchdowns for them. That one to me, okay. I have Montana into the quarterfinals. Probably the two most interesting games of this second round in this side of the bracket, the North Dakota State side of the bracket, Maine versus New Hampshire, Southeastern Louisiana versus Sam Houston State University. Two conference matchups here, Maine and UNH out of the CAA, while Southeastern Louisiana and Sam Houston are out of the Southland Conference. Anything here? Do you see a non-seeded team, Brad? What better question? What non-seeded team, New Hampshire or Sam Houston State, has the best chance of winning?
Good question, because honestly, I think those are both really good candidates for upsets. I would probably lean towards New Hampshire.
Okay.
But I don't feel great about it. Honestly, I'm really just hoping that Southeastern Louisiana ends up coming to Fargo, because I got a whole slew of Waterboy jokes that I'm ready to go with. And I want to have a week of talking about Bobby Boucher and Mr. Coach Klein.
Oh boy, so many drops. We'd have so many drops.
If they end up coming here, it's going to be glorious. So that's really what I'm rooting for, and nothing else.
Well, here's an interesting fact that both of these teams, both these matchups for Southeast Louisiana and Sam Houston State, they play back on November 16th at Southeast Louisiana. Southeast Louisiana winners of that game, 34-21. For Maine and New Hampshire, New Hampshire and Maine played 2 weeks ago, November 23rd. That one was in New Hampshire, a win for the Wildcats, 24-3 over Maine. This one's going to be in Maine.
Yeah, and it's tough to beat a good team twice in one season.
It is.
NDSU's
done it.
Yeah, they have. Not impossible, but it's tough. I'm good. I would say, again, if I had to pick one, I'd stick with Maine getting upset. Like I said, Sam Houston, the injuries that have hit Sam Houston have been rough.
Yeah. And Southeast Louisiana, they lost to TCU at TCU and then lost to South Dakota State in back-to-back weeks and have been on a roll since then. And the Southland got 3 teams in. McNeese State, a team that was toward the top of the Southland Conference for much of the year, in fact, went 10-2 overall, 6-1 in the conference, got throttled by Southeast Louisiana at home. The Cowboys lost 41-7 to the Lions. I honestly think it is Sam. I want to say New Hampshire. I don't want to say Sam Houston State. I'm going to say New Hampshire is the best chance of pulling off the upset.
Okay.
So I'll go with that one. Moving on down the list, Jacksonville State, McNeese State. Boy, Jacksonville State really put a hurting on whoever they played last week, Samford, which I was surprised by. You know, Samford out of the SoCon, Jacksonville State, not really a known for the Power Conference or whatever conference they're in. The MEAC, I think, or the OVC, the Ohio Valley. So I was kind of surprised by the 55-14 victory for Jacksonville State, even though they were at home. But I think McNeese State has that one. I think the Towson-Fordham game is going to be an interesting one. Fordham, out of the Patriot League, does have, how does it go? They do offer scholarships, so they weren't eligible to win their conference.
Yes.
So they went 11-1 in the regular season, beat a Temple team, an FBS school. Not a great Temple team, but all the same, you're winning against an FBS school, so that's big. Towson, oh, okay. If I get this right, and I have to remember his name, but I'm looking right at my internet, and I got to find the guy's name, but they have a Walter Payton Award guy in their running back, who actually close to winning the Walter Payton Award last year. And of course, my mind is blanking on who this is, but I'll pull it up here in a second.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Would you like my honest opinion?
Oh, wait, hang on. Eastern Illinois, Tennessee State.
My honest opinion is, who cares?
Why? What do you mean,
Why?
Who cares?
Because they're on the other side of the bracket, and I really don't care.
I think Towson's got this Tigers team has an opportunity to, be good. This Towson team is scary. Terrence West is his name.
Until they match up against, and if they beat Eastern Illinois, wake me up. Until then, I honestly I don't know.
Tennessee State, Eastern Illinois. You think it's going to go straight chalk in the other bracket where you've got all these seeded teams? You think it's going to be no problem there?
No, I don't agree with that. I'll probably pick an upset. You'll have to read the email conversation to get that pick.
Right.
But I'll have an upset in there.
Okay. To me, these are games that I'm going to watch. I want to watch Towson Fordham, and I want to watch Eastern Illinois Tennessee State.
Okay.
I think more so the Towson Fordham game to me is going to be one where I go, okay, what do these teams have to offer? Because I think out of that other bracket, those are a couple of the sleepers in my mind. And again, Eastern Illinois, offensively, they're so prodigious. But, you know, South Dakota State last year, that was the same script for them last year, as Eastern Illinois was such a good offensive team, and South Dakota State rolled them. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's fun. I love playoffs, and I love that we get to have these conversations. So, we'll see. And the whole who cares thing, I'm a little offended by it, but whatever.
Well, I mean, we're spending a lot of time talking about teams that nobody has, and people that nobody has any clue about, and we wouldn't play until, you know, the first week of January.
You know,
that's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah. I hear you. I think people are starting to care more so about the overall bracket because I think you put it best. They're already saying, okay, cool, Furman.
Okay.
They're moving on with it.
They're looking a little more at Maine, New Hampshire, or Southeast Louisiana, Sam Houston. I think there's a little bit of interest there. The other side, I don't know that, like you said, we're spending a lot of time talking about teams that we don't care about and that people in Fargo are probably not going to see play.
I think maybe you should.
That's all I'm saying.
Maybe you should spend some time on these teams. What did you go last week picking? 1-3?
Yeah, that happened.
Okay. That happened. All right. NDSU men's and women's basketball will move to the hard court. They both won Thanksgiving tournaments this past week, or holiday tournaments, if you will. They played Friday, Saturday. Which one were you more surprised by, Brad? The men or the women winning?
For me, probably the women's team. I mean, just because the expectations for this team were not very high. We've seen great play out of Brooke Lamar so far, and she's done a wonderful job in stepping up and being that number one option for NDSU. But there was a lot of youth, and we just weren't sure what we were going to get or what they were going to be, you know, what they were going to be good at. That was one question that when we interviewed Carolyn DeHoff a few weeks ago, that, you know, when I asked this team above anything else, the one thing this team is going to do well this year is, and the answer was compete and play hard,
yep.
which is super. But I want to know, you know, I want to see a skill that this team is going to do, because you can work as hard as you want to. I can go out there and work as hard as I want to, but at a certain level, I'm just going to get destroyed because of the talent. And that's, you know, that concerned me a little bit. And seeing them come out and pick up a win and at a tournament. And I mean, I think that's at the very least, it's good for confidence for a team that I think needs a confidence boost.
I agree with you to that point, how it is a little bit to the point where they needed some confidence boost, especially after you lose at home against Northern Iowa and the way you lost against Northern Iowa.
Yep.
Those things, you need those. It's a young team to go out on the road to L.A.
And do what learning how to win.
Yeah, and doing what they did. That's awesome. However, I'm more surprised by NDSU, the men winning on the road and doing what they did, because the first game they were able to hold on, and it was the same story, all these free throws again and all these fouls, but they put in 91 points in that game. They put in 87 against Rider. This team offensively is not supposed to be able to do that. They're supposed to hold teams down, low-scoring affairs. What I'm finding with this team is they're kind of – they found a rhythm a little bit out there offensively, and it was without Taylor Braun. I don't think Taylor Braun had that great of a tournament. That to me is more surprising, because when I watched this team at UND, I noticed that it was Taylor Braun or bust. You think Braun had 21 points in that first round game against Santa Clara. 19 of those came from the free throw line. He was 1-9 shooting. But you look around, Trayvon Wright had a big game. Marshall Bjorklund had a big game. Lawrence Alexander, a really good game. Corey Brown went 4 of 6. There was a lot of contribution from other players. Then in the next game, the championship game, this guy from, and I got a chance to listen to the whole game. Carlin Dupree played 13 minutes, scored 10 points, was an electric guy offensively off the bench. Once he gets healthy and back into game shape, because he missed the first couple weeks due to injury, and back into learn the flow, this freshman I think is going to have a pretty good impact on this team to help with depth.
Yeah, and honestly, we've talked about this already, and so I don't want to, continue to make the same points every week, but they need something off the bench.
Yep.
And Mike Felt, hot and cold, isn't going to cut it.
No. Need something consistent. Yep.
They need something consistent, or at the very least, you don't even necessarily need one guy to be consistent. Obviously, that's ideal, but you need a few different options to be able to, okay, let's hope, let's have three different guys that can hopefully get hot and be able to make some plays for us, and then you ride the hot hand.
Yeah.
And right now, or initially, they had one guy. They had Felt, and that was it. And if Felt wasn't scoring, then they weren't going to get any scoring off the bench.
Right.
So at the very least, this gives them a second option of, okay, if Mike's not on, then let's go to Dupree and see what we can get. Maybe he'll be able to give us a little bit more.
Yeah, that's the hope. Obviously, you nailed it there. Felt 8 for 14 in the Cable Car Classic Championship game against Ryder. Had 23 points to lead the way for his team. Taylor Braun was 2 of 5, only had 7 points. That, to me, is more surprising, that they found some offensive balance.
Yeah.
If they can keep this up, let the defense kind of come around, add some depth. Yeah, we talked about last week, there's some problems with this team. Some correctable, like you said about the pick and roll. Maybe some not, but if Carlin Dupree, and that's a lot to ask for a freshman, but if he comes in and all you tell him is go, hey, we're going to put you in for 20 minutes, maybe 15, could be 10, doesn't matter your minutes. Your objective, go score, /create. If you just make it that simple for him, it becomes I can do that. From the sounds of it, that might be where they're headed with him. That's what I hope. But to me, the men more surprising. The women, though, congratulations to both of them for that nice weekend for both of them. So really, really good to them. Let's move on now as we're done talking local stuff, NDSU all the way. Again, last reminder, check out and make sure and look for our picks for the FCS playoff games. They'll be coming out probably Thursday. We'll tweet that out, Facebook that out. It'll be on KFGO.com. So let's move on to
regional.
The NFC North had some interdivision matchups this week. The Vikings beat the Bears in overtime, and the Lions throttled the Packers. First question for you, Brad. Were you mad the Vikings won? And I know that seems like an odd question.
I don't think it's an odd question. I was mad on two fronts.
Why?
I really wanted to see a second tie.
Okay.
And I had a buddy of mine who messaged me today and said, with the way this season's going, I'd have rather seen a second tie, because that would, at least at the very least, out of this season, we could get the answer to a pretty sweet trivia question for years to come.
Right.
In the fact that we'd have had two straight ties. So there was that. And then the other side of it is, we're playing for draft picks at this point and draft position.
Yes.
So wins don't really do a whole lot for that.
I agree with you, and that was kind of the first thing, in fact, I thought when I saw that they won was, hey, you know, you're steadily climbing up the draft order, and you don't want to do that. You want to be steadily staying down at the one and the two, and so the more you win, the worse it looks. However, I like the fact that this team is still competing based solely on the fact that I think there's a lot of talent there, and I would like to see Leslie Frazier continue to be the coach at Minnesota.
Okay. Well, and part of it, too, I mean, this was both of these teams were in the Christmas spirit because they tried really, really hard to give this game away. I mean, getting a 15-yard face mask on a field goal?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's just. And the Vikings, when they kicked off with 20 seconds, why on earth would you kick the ball to Devin Hester?
Right.
Why? I mean, why? I don't. Both teams tried really hard to give this game away, and the Bears just have to be a little bit better at it this week.
Well, I agree with you there. The Bears, now more seriously for them, it's playoff-wise where they're going to be. It doesn't get any easier for them. I know they have to go to Dallas, I think, at some point. Both them and the Packers have a couple Cowboy games coming up. In fact, next week for Chicago, they're at home against Dallas. But Jay Cutler, you know, you need him back. It looks like, okay, I won't say you need him back to win. That is probably not the right way to say it. But you're trying to keep pace with Detroit. You already are done with Detroit. You got beat both times by Detroit. And you see what Detroit did against Green Bay. And we'll transfer into that because now, if you're Green Bay, it's should we rush Aaron Rodgers back? Because will we be good enough to beat Detroit? Is Detroit going to slip themselves up, or have they found a key, or have they found some consistency? You know, that the question to me after that 40-10 beatdown of the Packers was, okay, can Detroit bottle this? How does Detroit bottle what they did?
Man, Detroit and just doesn't, though. They're just up and down, and that's just kind of the way they are.
Right. Hey, but if you're Detroit, not every offensive lineman's going to be calling out your defensive line, which for whatever reason, Green Bay's offensive lineman said, hey, these guys are dirty. I don't like the way they play.
For some, I mean, okay, he's, congratulations. Welcome to pretty much every of the other teams. I mean,
right.
To me, that doesn't, you know, oh my gosh, didn't, you know, Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley, they were, you know, we'll do okay. It's fine. But now, oh my gosh, he said they were dirty. So now we're going to go out and win by 30. I mean, you know, give me a break.
I think that it did spark something in them. However, can they bottle that? To me, it should have been.
No, what was sparked in them was the fact that they played against Matt Flynn. That's what sparked in them.
I think it had a lot more to do with the fact that they were, you know, they felt like there was something to prove out there. And this guy speaks up and talks about them and calls out the defensive line, and they come up with a big game. The defensive line was dominant in this game.
They should be dominant every game. They've got two of the top talents at the defensive tackle position in the game. I mean, I'm not going to put it on some comment that somebody made that made the difference in the game. I just think that's it's nice fodder for people like us who have podcasts and radio shows. But when it comes down to it, did it really make them, oh, I'm going to all of a sudden my swim move or whatever move is going to work that much better because of the comment that this guy made? I mean, come on.
That's kind of your response to people saying the comments made them play better. Your Burt Reynolds laugh, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Detroit going to win this division? What do you think? I mean, they're a game up. Actually, two games up because they do have the tiebreaker over the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, after you know, I have a wager with you on Green Bay winning the division, and I think the only way that Green Bay lost the division was if Aaron Rodgers got hurt, and Aaron Rodgers got hurt. So, I mean, I think Detroit's in the driver's seat, and I think I'm going to lose that one pretty handily.
Detroit's schedule the rest of the way at Philadelphia, at home against
winnable.
Baltimore, a home
winnable.
Against New York, on the road against Minnesota, all very winnable games, although
yep.
The Philadelphia game, if we were to say bet-wise, they're not favored in that one. What do you think?
Detroit at Philly?
Yeah. What do you think the line would be? Philly's 7-5-2. So.
Now this is the old Bill Simmons Cousin Sal weekly podcast that they do, where they guess the lines. If I was to guess, oh gosh, Detroit at Philly.
Couple division leading teams right now.
Yeah, I'd probably. To me, I think the two teams are pretty close to even. I would say it's probably Philly by either 2 or 3 would be what that line opens up at.
I have to agree with you. Philadelphia, Nick Foles has yet to throw an interception and 19 touchdowns so far this year.
That's very good.
That's pretty spectacular. It's pretty spectacular. I want to say that you're right. I think 3.5 would be about where I'd put the line for that game as well. So,
yeah, see, but I mean, the thing with Vegas really is that they, you know, it's 3 points for the
being at home.
3 points for being the home team, and that extra half point, they don't like throwing that half point hook in there unless there's a pretty significant difference. And if anything, I think there's been so much publicity on Calvin Johnson that if anything, if they threw a hook either way off of that 3 number,
maybe 2.5.
I think they'd throw it Detroit's way. So if I had to guess, I would say it's Philly by 3, but somewhere in the 2 to 3 range.
Okay. Sure. That's a great point too, because if this was, you know, you put it in a neutral position, it'd probably be a push with the way these two teams are playing. So yeah, I like your take. Moving down the list.
Can I be Vegas Insider? I really feel like I should be Vegas Insider.
We need to give you a better nickname then.
Okay.
If we call you Vegas Insider.
Great Vegas nickname.
Really? Cousin Shadow?
Cousin Shadow?
Cousin Shadow. Now you see, every time I hear the name Shadow, I think of two things. I think of Homeward Bound.
Bound, yeah, sure. Yeah,
and then I think of the old I think of the old radio show called The Shadow.
I'm not familiar. I know there's an old TV show called The White Shadow.
Oh, there is? I knew there was there's a radio program back in the day that was called The Shadow, and we have tapes of it when I was growing up, and I liked to listen to it because it was really intense and it really theater of the mind. It was crazy. All right, we'll move on.
That's probably a good idea.
All right, Minnesota Twins are in the news in the offseason.
Yeah,
couple starting pitchers reportedly signed. I don't know if the Phil Hughes deal is for sure. I think it's close to being done. If it's not
Phil Hughes, that's been announced. I think so.
Okay.
That's done. So 3-year deal for Phil Hughes.
Okay. Phil Hughes and then Ricky Nolasco, both guys signed by the Minnesota Twins this offseason this week. Thoughts? Let's just talk about it. What do you think?
I think if your number one and two starters going into next year are Phil Hughes and Ricky Nolasco, that you're in a world of trouble.
You're a third place team at best?
That's if you have a really good offense.
I really can't disagree with you because I think that was what we said. I brought it up. I go, so they're going to be the number one and two starters for this rotation, aren't they? Boy.
Yeah
that's
just, not good.
No, it's
that's
not because Phil Hughes is probably, what was he? He was probably three or four in New York. And Ricky Nolasco wasn't the top starter on a horrible Marlins team for many years.
Yeah.
And had a great stretch there for the Dodgers. Mind you, the Dodgers had an offensive firepower in the National League that was pretty much unmatched.
And you play in the NL West, you play in some great pitchers' ballparks.
You do. San Francisco for one.
And San Diego.
San Diego for another. And again, 8-3, his ERA was somewhere in the 3 range, maybe a little lower. When he got traded, he was traded last year midseason from Miami to Los Angeles. But that's the fact of the matter. I think that's what I take from it. Everybody's going to get excited. A lot of people are going to say, hey, we've heard of Phil Hughes. Oh, we've heard of Ricky Nolasco. Oh, my goodness, they're spending money. Reality is they're not all-star pitchers. They're not even top-of-the-rotation pitchers. They are middle-of-the-road, probably better than Kevin Correa and Mike Pelfrey. But by how much? Maybe not a lot. So, again, they're good to get a little fodder, and people are going, okay, the Twins are actually going out there signing starting pitchers.
My question is, what, in order to have a winning team, what do you have to have these guys do? Nolasco has always been kind of a hot and cold guy, and if you're depending on him as your number two or three starter, or in this case, even your number one starter, I think if you want to be any sort of contender, your best case, the absolute best you can have Ricky Nolasco be as your number three.
Right.
So I don't know what the end game is here. If you just want guys who can, you know, throw innings, and Nolasco has been very, I mean, he throws a lot of innings.
Same with Hughes.
And, yeah. I mean, you know, and if your goal is to just, we need some stop gaps while some of our young arms get ready. Okay. I can buy into that a little bit.
And I thought that was the idea too, is that this is going to be stop gaps essentially.
Yeah. And I can get on board with that.
Okay. And so can I. I'm just saying, don't expect, I think this team improves. How much? It's not going to be because Phil Hughes and Ricky Nolasco are going to have amazing seasons. I don't think that's going to be the case this season. I think if they do improve, it's got to be offensively, and it's going to be with some young players. That's my take on this team. But be that as it may, Twins are spending some money. Also making some moves, the Minnesota Timberwolves traded Derek Williams, highest draft pick ever for this team.
Yes.
And did not pan out for them. Now,
no.
The question is, and a lot of people are going to say, he just didn't get an opportunity, didn't fit in with what Minnesota was doing. Is that how you feel about it, Brad, or do you feel that he's just going to be a bust in general?
What I want to know, and what with any NBA player, what do you do well?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What's the one skill that you have that's going to make you valuable to a team for any for whatever number of years? And I don't know what that skill is with him.
He's athletic, so is everybody else in the NBA.
I was going to say, athleticism only gets you so far. I don't know what he does well, and he's kind of one of those tweener guys who seems like, well, he's a little bit too slow to guard small forwards, but he's not strong enough or big enough to guard power forwards, and just I just don't know that he has a skill that's good enough to make up for that.
I think that it was nice, if you can say nice. Maybe nice is not the way to put it, but giving him an opportunity to go play on a team where he is going to see some minutes, and already one game in December, 21 minutes. He wasn't seeing that kind of action on the floor with Minnesota. The thing is, you're right, Brad. What does he bring? He had seven rebounds, which was nice, but he is such a tweener because he's not that tall He's not that big to be a true forward. Doesn't really have a back-to-the-basket type of game.
Yeah.
He's a really athletic player with no position. So how do you make that work? For Sean Marion, it worked.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Marion was a difference. Sean Marion had a good
point guard,
fake and drive, and he had a great floater, and he had the best point guard in the NBA at that time.
Right, and Steve Nash.
In Steve Nash.
And offense ran, it made sense, and so on and so forth.
And with Sean Marion, though, you know, you could count on with him. His thing was he could almost guard four positions, really. And he was an outstanding rebounder. And like I said, he had a good slash game where he could get to the bucket. He had a good floater. So, I mean, he had a few things that he did really, really, really well. And I don't know if Derek Williams has that yet. Maybe he'll be proven wrong, like you said, getting some more minutes on a team that fits him better. But, I mean, I just didn't see that with him in Minnesota. Just didn't.
So Derek Williams moves on. I think it's probably best for both parties. The question I asked you was, is he a bust or does he just need a change of scenery?
I'd lean towards bust.
I would too. And I was going to say that I think it's more of a bust at this point because when he played, I just didn't see what he did. Great college player and frankly played himself into the pick he got. The run that Arizona had in the NCAA tournament and the Pac-12 tournament, the way he played was insane. Played himself into that. I think he's, as this goes on, and we'll have to see, but I again, leaning towards bust, so I got to agree with Brad. So let's move on to
National.
A lot of things to talk about FBS football-wise.
Yeah.
I want to start out with what everybody's going to still be talking about on Monday in my mind, and it's going to be the Auburn-Alabama game. The Iron Bowl with the finish that probably is top three all-time greatest finishes in college football history. Up there with the Hail Mary and up there with Stanford-Cal.
Ooh.
Okay. Let's do it. You don't think so?
I mean, the fact that I can that you can think of those, you know, the Flutie play and the band is on the field play right off the bat. I mean, that's tough. I'd have to do a little bit more research on that before I said that definitively. But I mean, but it's definitely up there. It's a crazy, crazy way to finish a game.
Here's what I'll say. What's at stake here for both teams? You're looking at a three-peat national championship for Alabama. You know, obviously you have next week to deal with in the SEC championship game, but that kind of is you're playing for a three-peat. I mean, you have to win this game in order to have an opportunity at three-peat still. You're playing for that. It's the rankings of the two teams is extremely high, two top five teams. It's the Iron Bowl. In my mind, probably second, third, one of the top five best rivalries in all of college football. All that's at stake. And the way it ends, where Alabama's up a touchdown under a minute to go, some crazy broken play that Auburn gets. Well, it wasn't a broken play. It was a bad play by Alabama to run up on Marshall. He finds a guy, floats behind him, scores a touchdown there. And the last play of the game where everybody thought, okay, we're going to go to overtime, they put 1 second back on the clock. And here's another thing I want to discuss. If you're Nick Saban, why are you sending out your kicker for a 57-yarder? Why not throw a Hail Mary?
What do you think has – if he – and see, I don't know Alabama's kicker that well, but
– it wasn't even their regular kicker, by the way.
Okay, yeah, because they had one guy that could kick a little farther. Here's the deal. I don't mind that so much, because what has a higher likelihood to happen, to actually complete a Hail Mary – or to have your kicker get into one just right and hit it.
Here's,
to me, I think the field goal probably has – the percentages probably say field goal.
Go ahead.
Let me take this a little different way, though, or an opinion that's probably not quite as popular. To me, the way this game ended is a little bit of a disappointment.
What do you mean?
I don't know which one of those teams is better. I mean, the game ended on the flukiest of fluke plays. I would have really liked to see that game go to overtime.
Okay.
I just don't know that that's an accurate representation of, okay, this, that Auburn is, I feel that Auburn is definitely better than Alabama.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because we're going to get lost in the craziness of the finish.
Yep.
I have no problem with the way it finished. I have a problem with the fact that if you're Nick Saban, you have 1 second left. Your kicker, that's usually your kicker up to this point, has missed three field goals, two chip shots essentially for him. One was blocked. You have 1 second left, and you're talking about what is the better chance of happening, completing a pass or kicking a field goal. My problem with it is going, what is the worst that can happen if things don't go our way? You don't... With a Hail Mary pass, the worst that happens is you're going to get it intercepted.
Or a sack. What about a sack and a fumble, and it gets returned?
That's even less of a chance, because Auburn's going to come out and rush three or four. They're not going to rush a lot, and you're going to have five protected. That's part.
But he's also got to wait for the guys to get down the field far enough. So what do you think is – what happens more often, that a guy returns a missed field goal for a touchdown, or that there's a sack fumble return for a touchdown?
The chances to me would be greater for a field goal to return to a touchdown, because of the personnel that's on the field. Think about it. You have probably nine guys, actually, you know what, all 11 guys, maybe 9 to 11 guys on there who are not cut out to track down a guy who's going to return a kickoff in general. I mean, that's their kickoff returner. The punt returner's back there returning this kick. You have offensive linemen on there, plus your kicker and your holder. These guys are not cut out to tackle anybody.
Okay.
So the chances of a sack fumble return for a touchdown are rare, but I think that it's a more likely chance that you get a field goal return for a touchdown.
Okay,
frankly, you throw it down and you play for overtime.
I can turn that right around on you and say that Auburn didn't exactly have their entire return team out there. They had their kick returner, yes, but it's not like, you know, they had defensive tackles and they didn't exactly have, you know, fullbacks and offensive linemen out there to block for it.
No, but you know that there's a good chance you can get the return. You know there's a thing where it's a missed field goal return. That's something you practice for. You know they have that in there somewhere in Auburn where they go, okay, we're going to practice the missed field goal return.
Okay,
here's what's going to happen.
Alabama doesn't practice that.
I think Alabama doesn't practice the fact that they're going to have a personnel out there that comes out and goes, this is
what Alabama practices. I gotcha.
What's that?
I'm glad. I said, now you're trying to tell me what Alabama practices.
I'm not telling you what Alabama practices. I'm saying that to kick
you're
a field goal.
Me what Auburn practices.
Yeah, that's probably what a lot of teams practice.
Okay.
The return on a missed field goal.
Well, but if you're practicing it one way, you're practicing it both ways. Here's the deal. I don't have a problem with what they did. To me, this is hindsight. You know, yeah, you know what? 57-yard field goals do get made.
Not by a redshirt freshman kicker who has kicked one field goal all year.
If he's got the bigger leg, I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know what his range is. And I just don't. And I think that if you're trying to tell me you knew what his range was better than Nick Saban does, then I think you're trying to sell me some property that I'm just not buying.
You're playing for a national championship. Every game from here on out is a national championship game if you're Alabama. The game is in the balance, essentially. You have one play to make before overtime. Do you put it in the hands of your senior quarterback who could win a Heisman, or do you put it on the leg of a redshirt freshman kicker that, hey, you know what, he hit a 57-yard field goal warming up when there wasn't the pressure of the crowd or anybody rushing him? What do you do? If I'm a coach, I go, look, you're a senior, chuck it down there. Best scenario, hey, we catch it. Worst scenario, gets intercepted, we'll take our chances. I'm not going to put a freshman kicker in that position, and I'm not going to put out a team that...
I like how you just completely ignored my worst-case scenario.
The sack fumble?
Yeah.
Okay. That.
How many times have you seen a quarterback get sacked on a Hail Mary?
It happens a fair amount. It does.
Okay.
But again, you're dealing with the fact that they're only going to rush three or four. I think, and you wanted
yes,
you want you want to ask me per-
never get to the quarterback.
You want to ask me percentages.
You
want to ask me percentages. The percentages of a sack fumble happening, like you said, opposed to him returning a missed field goal for a touchdown. I think that they favor the missed field goal return for a touchdown. I do.
And I think you are absolutely nuts to think that.
Well,
because we have one of these that happens a year, maybe two.
And how many sack fumbles return for a touchdown have you ever seen?
A lot more than that.
On a Hail Mary opportunity? Please. Plus, you have to remember, it's not like he was chucking it 60 yards. He's only going to be chucking it 40. Takes maybe 5 seconds the guys to get down there. And I get 5 seconds is an eternity in football, but he would have had the time. I disagree with the kick and the field goal thing. I do. So, another thing I disagree with, and I have to ask you this quick, Michigan has an opportunity to tie and go to overtime with Ohio State. Do you like Brady Hoke's call to go for two in that situation? Ohio State won 42-41, by the way.
I mean, I don't mind it because if the roles were reversed, if it was Ohio State, I kicked the extra point. If you're Michigan, and when you're being realistic about it, which team is better? The longer the game goes on, the more it favors Ohio State because they're better. So if you've got a shot and I can get it down to one play from 2 yards out, and if I can get it in, then we win the game, rather than, okay, I've got to go up against a better team and we have to play better than them for a longer amount of time. I don't mind the gutsiness, and I bet his players loved the gutsiness that he had to go for it. I think, you know, it didn't work out, but I actually don't mind that Michigan took the shot.
If I'm Brady Hoke, here's what I'd do. Because the overtime situation in college football is much different than the NFL. The NFL, you have to play, I hate to say it, but you have to play a football game. It's not just line up at the 25 and, okay, here's your best.
Yeah.
So then I would say, okay, if you don't really feel that you're going to be able to stop this team from scoring a touchdown again in a hole, you know, and then it's over sudden death, all right, let's avoid it. But it's college football. I think you basically, you start over at zero again. Maybe your defense comes up with a play. Maybe they stop Ohio State and they hold them to a field goal. I think that if you've gotten this far, you going for two in this situation is kind of telling your team, you know, I don't think you guys are good enough to beat them for extra time. I think that maybe we just take a shot here. Which I
okay, but is I mean, or maybe it's I've got so much. I mean, you can you can frame this however you want to. You can frame it like that, and I can frame it like
yep.
I've got so much confidence in you that I believe that you're going to get the 2 yards here, and let's not deal with overtime. We're going to win it right now.
The other problem I have with this is he asked his team. If I'm a coach, I go, I want to make the decision here because I'm not going to leave it up to, frankly,
some emotional
kids. Because, Brad, we've been in sports before, even at the lowest levels. You want to do what you think you can do. You want to be like, I want to take the last shot, or I want to do this, or give the ball to me, so on and so forth. You know, you want to go for the dagger. We sit as fans, sit back and go, you got to go for two here. A lot of fans would agree. However, if you're the coach, you got to go, look, I understand the emotions. I've been in this situation before. But the best chance we have of trying to win this game is if we play for overtime. So, yeah, to me, going to the players, I understand
it. Unless you're using that as a motivational tactic. In my mind, what I would think is he should have already had, if he's going to do that, you have your mind made up.
Just say
it. And you use it. What do you guys think? And
right.
And they say, go for it, let's do it, and, you know, kind of rally him up for that one play.
Yep.
That I can see. But if he legitimately said, oh, what do you think, guys? And was going to base his decision off of what they said. Yeah, I got a problem with that. It's got to be your decision.
Yeah, it has to be your decision. It can't be, let's take a vote here. You're the head coach. So,
yeah exactly.
If I have, that's the bigger issue I have with it. It goes both ways. I would have rather seen Michigan go for the overtime and see if they can beat Ohio State in overtime. But it is what it is. That game kind of took a backseat, unfortunately, to what happened in Auburn because the ending to both was pretty spectacular.
They were crazy.
Yeah.
Just meant more.
Great, great sports theater. So, love it. Let's get to our favorite segment of the show. First, BCS standings.
Yeah.
Florida State is 1. Ohio State is 2. Auburn is 3. Florida State, Ohio State national championship game. Do you like that?
That was, I was going to say, my question for you is if it ends up with that national championship game, would you be disappointed?
No, I wouldn't be. Because I think, I hate saying this because I always get the feeling that Ohio State might be better than people think they are, and then they go out and get throttled.
And then they get rocked.
But I'm not going to be disappointed because I'm already disappointed by the system as it is. So
okay. No
matter who ends up in the national championship game, I'm disappointed.
I mean, as far as that goes, for the most part, again, the BCS, if you look over the years, and if you look at what came before the BCS was a step up.
Oh yeah, it was.
From what there was before. And for the most part, they've gotten it right. I would be disappointed in a Florida State, Ohio State national championship game because I don't believe in this case that the best two teams would be playing for the national championship.
And again, according to the BCS, they went undefeated. They are the two best teams.
Yeah, and I just...
But you don't know that because you don't have a playoff system.
Yep,
and it'll get...
And I get it. And I think a Florida State, Ohio State... I don't know. And especially when it could end up being... It could even end up being Florida State fans... Jameis Winston. I mean, I don't know. There's just, to me, with that, there's just not a lot of spice with that matchup.
Does Jameis Winston, because of all this pending off-the-field issues, does he win the Heisman? And I know AJ McCarron lost, but...
Yeah, he was my guy. He'd been the guy I'd been touting for a few weeks.
And you were right, because a lot of people talking about were saying, man, he's starting to play, and he had... To me, if Alabama wins that game... Everybody talks about the 99-yard touchdown pass he had as the signature moment. That's a Heisman moment. And that's what I thought when I saw it, too, going, oh, boy, there it is. But again, they lost. So, and it's unfortunate, but all of his success or most of his success had been kind of matched with, his team's really good.
So, and the bigger picture question there is, what matters more to Heisman voters. Is it on the field or off the field? And that might be what it comes down to, because
and it should be on the field.
You know who this probably benefits the most? Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel. But they've been losing too many games. You know,
once you get to that point, every candidate other than Winston is losing, and he's involved with some potentially serious legal problems.
Right.
I don't think the Heisman voters will vote for him because there's a clause in the voting criteria that Heisman voters are given. There's language about off the field or character or something like that.
Right.
So I mean, they're supposed to take those things into consideration.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that you're right. I honestly do believe that it's going to be somebody other than Jameis Winston, because people are going to be too scared to say, yeah, okay, he's going to win it. And then all of a sudden he comes out and he's guilty of whatever the charges are brought against him. And that's like, oh, he's the Heisman winner, huh? That's interesting. That's what I think a lot of these people are going to be scared about. I think the voting closes. I think you have to have your ballots in by the end of next week
And it's so interesting because, and it just kind of brings a little perspective on things. Reggie Bush got his Heisman taken away for taking money.
Right. Right. The NCAA and all the taking money thing is a lot of, it's kind of garbage.
That's a bigger topic than we have time for.
Yeah, it is. We got to get moving here. So we'll have a lot of time to discuss next week, and then whenever the Heisman comes out, we'll probably put in our own who we think the Heisman are going to be. We'll see who gets invited,
Do you think we can get a ballot?
No, boy. I think they've already been distributed. I know that much. I don't think we can. I know Mike McFeely used to get a ballot, my boss here at KFGO.
Yeah.
And a couple years back, if not last year, in fact, Kansas State. Yeah, it was last year. Kansas State sent him some stuff, because you get a list of who's on the ballot and his name might have reappeared. And so Kansas State sent them some things to...
Some Colin Klein?
Yep, some Colin Klein. I think it was like Band-Aids or something. It was interesting stuff. But Kansas State sends and say, hey, you should vote for him.
I mean, this is the 21st episode. You'd think we'd have enough to call it to get a Heisman ballot.
I think Bill Snyder's an avid listener of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Hey, Bill, how you doing? So we'll move on from that. We'll get to our favorite segment of the show, NFL coaches on the hot seat. Brad, you start with your number one.
It's still Schiano.
Yep.
Still Schiano. I think he's pretty well entrenched in that number one.
I think he's gone, yeah. I do. I totally agree with you. We're same on number one. Who's number two? I know we're going backwards here because we're going 1-2-3 instead of 3-2-1, but it's all right.
Kubiak's going to be number two yet. I'm pretty sure that's who I had last week. And at this point of the year, I think our numbers are going to start to stay
pretty similar,
yeah. I think Kubiak's got that spot.
Yes, I agree with you, too. I think three is going to be where we differ a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I still have Joe Philbin as number three. Yeah. However, they're right now tied with Baltimore for the sixth and final wild card spot in the AFC.
Yep.
They have a shot to make the wild card. Does he save his job if they make the playoffs?
Yes.
Not necessarily. Lovie Smith won 10 games last year.
Well, again,
they missed the playoffs,
very,
I get.
Very different circumstances.
Yes, okay, yep, that's true.
Very, very different circumstances.
I see that. I think Philbin's three. I have Leslie Frazier and Mike Smith kind of towards the back.
Leslie Frazier is my three.
And that's kind of what I thought, too.
Yeah, I still think he's done.
Okay, so we've moved on from that. We've got our top three. Who are your top three in our new NBA segment?
Yeah.
Top three coaches of the year in your mind.
I tell you what, why don't you take first crack?
Okay, that's a good question. Right now, I'm looking at some of the records, and you've got, of course, your... Anyway, why not Jason Kidd? At least he should get an Emmy, or something.
I mean, you got fined $50,000 for throwing the spilling, quotes, the beverage on the floor. But, I mean, really, he made, I think, I looked up the number. I believe it's around $195 million that he made in his NBA career.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he's the fifth highest paid player of all time.
He's going to be fine.
Yeah, so I think he's going to be okay. I don't know. If nothing else. I thought it was funny, but, yeah.
My number three right now is Doc Rivers.
Okay.
Who's your number three?
I think my number three, gosh, there's a couple of guys that I could see sneaking in there. I think my number three right now is a guy that maybe he should be a little bit higher, but I'm going to go out to Portland for my number three guy.
Terry Stotts.
I'm going to go Terry Stotts.
And funny you should say that because he's my number two.
He's your number two guy?
Yeah, I like him at number two. Portland has really just been unbelievable this year. Better than I think a lot of people would have figured them to be. And, of course, they're in the Northwest Conference, and they're half a game up on OKC.
Yep.
So who's your number two?
I'm flip-flopping really with you. I got Doc Rivers as my number two just because I think he was such a high
profile.
That's the word I'm looking for. High profile ad. And I think even though the Clippers right now are sitting at fourth in the conference, I've got Clippers and Doc Rivers at number two.
I think you and I are going to agree on who our number one is. I think we're going to go Frank Vogel.
Yeah.
Yeah, Frank Vogel to me right now with what the Pacers are doing. What are they? Have they lost a game yet this year? It seems like they're
16-1.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. He's just doing a great job, and we all knew the team was going to be good coming in. I don't think that was going to be a question, but they're dominating, and they're doing it defensively too. That's the one thing that kind of slips under the radar a little bit, but you look at, if you just go to their schedule one time, look at the scores they're winning by. They're winning by 20, they're winning by 15.
I don't think their defense slips by at all. They're almost 6 points a game, or they're about 5 points a game better than the second best team as far as points allowed per game. And that's San Antonio. They're more than 5 points a game better.
I will do one thing for you here. We've got a question that was posed by Marcus from Mayville. He wants to know our take on the Washington Wizards for a couple reasons. One,
why?
When he wrote this, Washington was 6-8. They're 8-9 now. Yep. But as he writes, he goes, John Wall is reminding me of a couple things. One, he was the overall pick once upon a time. And two, the Wizards are still in the NBA. Are you surprised by not only the resurgence of John Wall, but the fact that the Wizards have basically put together a pretty solid team? Nene is averaging 15 points, 6 rebounds a game.
No, his problem is he's always hurt, though.
And then you've got Bradley Beal, a Florida guy, scoring 20 points a game, averaging 44%, shooting the three. Essentially, he wants to know, with the way the East is kind of shaping up, it's going to be two teams now with Derrick Rose out. Do the Wizards have an opportunity to surprise some people? Can you see that happening?
No.
Really?
No.
Why not? Because they're the Wizards?
Because they're, you know, as Marcus put it, their so-called resurgence, they're not 500.
But they're in the East, and that doesn't matter.
Depends on what's your definition of matter. You know, to me, a resurgence, could they win a first-round playoff series in a horrible conference? Yeah, maybe, but, you know, big whoop. Tell me, name me a couple of other teams, you know, from 5-10 years ago that won a first-round series in the Eastern Conference and then got beat by teams that were better. You can't do it.
Here's what I'll say. You got to start somewhere, and Washington's a young team.
They don't have a bad starting spot. I'll give you that. But for this year's purposes, meh.
Meh? Meh. Right now,
I don't quite see it for this year.
Right now, they would be the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference if the playoffs started today.
Yeah.
They'd be playing Toronto.
Yeah, 6-10 division leading Toronto Raptors.
How bad? Yeah, that's just a bad Atlantic division. So, Well, Marcus and Mayville, thank you for the comment. We always thank and appreciate all comments. That's going to do it for the 021 podcast. We can hear him. It's Bing Crosby playing us out right now. Little White Christmas for you. Christmas music to begin and end the show all throughout the month of December. So, again, Find us on iTunes, The Pinto and White Shadow Show. Find us on KFGO.com. Love your comments. Love all the opportunities you give us to comment on what you say to us. And we're just a great show. Brad, enjoy your time in Thief River. Enjoy your time in Minnesota. Get back here safely, all right?
That's the plan, man.
So for Brad Jones, The White Shadow, I'm Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson, wishing you all to have a great December. And we'll see you next podcast.